Why get all your holiday decorations delivered through Instacart? Because maybe you only bought two wreaths, but you have 12 windows. Or maybe your toddler got very eager with the advent calendar. Or maybe the inflatable snowman didn't make it through the snowstorm. Or maybe the twinkle lights aren't twinkling. Whatever the reason, this season, Instacart's here for hosts and their whole holiday haul. Get decorations from the Home Depot, CVS, and more through Instacart and enjoy free delivery on your first three orders. Service fees and terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome in on Monday. It's Grant and Danny on the Fan. It is just after 2 o'clock on November 11th, 2024. We are taking you all the way up to 6:30 tonight. We are looking forward to making some sense of what we watched yesterday with the Steelers getting a one-point win over the Commanders, 28-27. Jay Gruden will be on the show for his normal Monday appointment at 5 o'clock. We'll talk to Austin Eckler tomorrow at 5 o'clock. Quick turnaround, though, because Thursday, coming very, very quickly, the game of the season to date, Washington 7-3, needs to get up off the mat for the Eagles. Hello, Danny. How are you?
Hey, buddy. Not much time to lick your wounds, to your point. If there's such a thing as a bad loss while losing to a good football team, Washington tried to do it yesterday. Like you told me before the game, they'll lose by a point to Pittsburgh. There's no shame in that, right? For a team that's ahead of schedule against a good quality football opponent that's as well coached as any team in the sport on an annual basis, coming off of a bye week, there are a lot of built-in things where you go, yeah, maybe a young group that's not quite ready for prime time loses to a really quality opponent. Lessons learned, we move on. The way that it happened yesterday has really stuck in my craw, and maybe that's a sign of positivity too, in the sense that the expectations are higher now. If this is Rivera riddled with mistakes, Sam Howell making errors all over the place, guys that shouldn't be on NFL rosters dropping passes, you go, yeah, game effort, that was awesome. But the bar's higher now, and again, maybe that's probably a good sign. But I am bitter from yesterday.
Yeah, I think that's actually really healthy. Honestly, I think that is indicative of a changing of the guard around here. Mm-hmm. Because there's really two ways to look at this game. There is the house money season, house money game, you almost beat the Steelers perspective, which I don't completely subscribe to by any means. And then there's the flip side of that, which is, oh, give me a break. You're up 10 points in the third quarter. You're at home. You've got a team on the mat. And basically all you've got to do is make one or two plays that were there to be made for the entire second half. You couldn't do it and you lose. That's a bad loss. I'm somewhere in the middle, if I'm being honest. I don't think this one burned me as much as it did you because of the nuance in the context here. They did not have Brian Robinson at running back, and they didn't have two of their top three tackles going up against the best defense they're going to face all season and easily the best defense they have faced so far this year. And despite Trent Scott, who I don't think is a starting NFL tackle, I'm not even sure that he is a quality swing tackle, like third tackle for a championship-level NFL team at this point. He's going head-to-head with T.J. Watt yesterday. You told me that going into the game, I'm expecting a bit of a fiasco off the edge. There's going to be sack fumbles. There's going to be some blood for Jaden Daniels. I thought they did a pretty good job. They didn't have their automatic kicker, who has not missed any kicks. They signed a guy who hadn't kicked in 3 years. That wasn't an issue, despite him kicking from deep a couple of times in the game. So, across the board, I actually thought yesterday went a little better than I would have anticipated. On Friday, when we did our show out in Bethesda slash Rockville, whichever you prefer.
North Bethesda Rockville.
Which, by the way, was a blast, and thank you to everyone who came out.
Sport and Social was a 10.
The Friday field trips have been remarkable.
Dude, we've been hitting bolts, dude.
I am really excited about how this is going. And I just think the people out there, Larry Bird and company, they couldn't have gotten the show more. You know, they were obviously listeners, but they just really, really fun to work with, and we just thank them for their hospitality. They were excellent to spend the day with. But I bring that up to say I picked Washington to beat the Steelers on Friday. When I found out Andrew Wiley was out, and without him and Lucas, and without Brian Robinson, who was ruled out as well, I switched my pick yesterday pregame with Linnell and Denton. I said, Pittsburgh's going to win the football game. I just didn't think they could block the Steelers. And they actually did a pretty good job. There have been games this year when Jaden Daniels has had as many as 21 pressures, you know, when he's passing, 17, 16, 13 in games this year. He was only pressured 11 times yesterday. They actually acquitted themselves pretty well. Now, they dropped too many passes. They made too many mistakes. I understand that. But I think, considering who was available and who wasn't, Steelers off of a bye, not lost on me. Tomlin 14-4 in that situation, 8 straight years with a win. I thought yesterday was more encouraging than discouraging, I'll be honest.
So Hal matters so much to me here. Had it been two backups or three at times on the offensive line and that, you know, TJ Watt and company having a field day, I'd go, what are you going to do? That sucks. You can't match. They beat everybody, let alone your backups and your second stringers.
Which is probably what you were expecting, I'm guessing, like me.
Yeah, I mean, seeing that no Andrew, which by the way, how crazy a year has it been? That now we're going, oh, Andrew Wiley's out. They can't afford to lose him.
So two things. One, he's been better and good. Like, he's just been legitimately good. Mm-hmm. Second, they don't have an option because Lucas is hurt.
Yeah.
If Wiley was out and Lucas was available, I don't think we'd be saying this. You just get what I'm saying?
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean.
Cornelius Lucas is very solid. You're guy that's supposed to replace Andrew Wiley was also out.
Yeah, Biadasz is hurt.
You were down to
time,
your third right tackle against the single best left defensive end in the NFL.
So if that's how the game got taken over and they couldn't manage a forward pass because TJ Watt was wreaking havoc and game wrecking, I go, yeah, I get it. That sucks. That had nothing to do with dropping passes. That's got nothing to do with not being able to field a punt on consecutive punts by Lamine Zaccheaus. That's got nothing to do with boneheaded penalties. I mean, man, oh, man. To me, this is a story of missed opportunity. You can get away with it one or two times. You can't get away with it constantly.
Well, you play a team as good as the Steelers.
Yeah.
And you make as many mistakes as they did, you cannot win. Right? I mean, just flat
out. That's the tail of the tape to me. And that's the part that burns. Like, this should have been the story of, can you believe they did? Like, remember when they played Cleveland and Myles Garrett had zero stats, had as many stats as you and I did? And we're going, oh, my God, this is incredible. Throw out what you thought about the O-line. This is the new paradigm. This is the new reality. If they beat the Steelers yesterday, just by making normal plays, no one's nothing exceptional. No one's even asking for, like, third down war daddy stuff where you're winning some tightly contested balls like their guys did in huge clutch moments. But if you overcome what you basically did yesterday by dealing with that excellent defense and all the pressure, the story today is give Bobby Johnson more money. Give everybody that's in charge over there all the flowers and throw flowers on the ground like they're the king of Zamunda walking into the room. Like, this is unbelievable what they overcame. Because they did that, and then it was stuff that regular guys that they're going to count on the rest of the way making either mistakes or being limited, and you're just going, damn it. You did the hard part. The hard part is stopping Pittsburgh from ruining everything. You did that. And you still lose that game because of stuff that you would count on guys doing 100 times out of 100.
That's where I'm not overly discouraged, honestly, because I don't think these mistakes, and Dan Quinn was asked about this today in his press conference. Like, are you worried because it's such a quick turnaround going into the Eagles game that you've got so many things to clean up? And what he basically said, and I agree with this, the stuff that we have to clean up happened in that game badly. It's not really who we're going to be. It's not really what we've been. You know, everyone talks about the drops, and they should. You could assign as many. If you want to call a drop a ball that hit someone in the hands that they should have caught, I think you can realistically make the case there were 6 or 7 times where if you just make a play for your quarterback, you can make the catch. Now, by definition, there were not that many drops because the definition of a drop is basically that a defender does not influence you dropping the football, and it's within the what we call the body, basically the catch radius. Mm-hmm. You're not making catches out wide athletically. And so, like, PFF, as an example, assigned 3 drops in the game yesterday. De'Ami Brown in the end zone, which was pretty obvious. Luke McCaffrey on the sideline on the ball that hit him in the hands right before he got blown up on a play that Daniels kept alive. And then the really, really bad drop by Zach Ertz. I think it was like a second and 11 in the middle of the
field. Ended up having to settle for a field goal.
When you're watching on TV, I bet you couldn't even tell he dropped it at first because he drops it. It bounces right up off the ground back to him, and he falls down. It looked like a catch.
Yeah, because his normal routine is that. Catch, fall to the ground almost immediately, either losing his balance or dragged down. And that one was killer.
Those were the three they actually assigned. But there were other times, you know, a couple times with Noah Brown with his hands on the ball.
Just make a play.
At the end of the game, if he makes that athletic catch with Pierre crashing into him on the back shoulder ball, a little underthrown, but still like a very catchable, very solid, give your guy a chance, let's go win a football game moment from Jaden in the offense. If he makes that catch, you're in field goal range, you kick it, you win the game. And they just didn't make those plays.
Right.
But there were so many other things they didn't do that they could have to win, right? They never turned the ball over. They've turned the ball over three times all season. It was only once yesterday, but how big was the muffed punt inside the 15? What that did, Danny, in my opinion, is it basically said to Pittsburgh, hey, you guys faked that punt and you gave us the ball at the 15-yard line for an easy touchdown. We're going to wipe that away by giving you one now, too. It basically, like, that is a game-changing break. You win because of that play, but then you essentially just took out your dry eraser and you erased it off the board and said, actually, we'll give you a drive that starts inside the 15 now just to make sure everything's evened out. That was a killer.
That was devastating.
Quinn did say today that he's sticking with Alameda Zacchaeus as his punt returner after two muffs put the ball on the ground twice yesterday. That's such a quick, next game Thursday. I worry about that mentally a little bit for him because he did put one on the ground against the Panthers earlier in the season as well. That's three this year.
Yeah. So I don't know if it was because it was a left-footed punter and if the spin was different. I just know that I've never seen anybody look that uncomfortable. That's not true. I have, and they got replaced as punt returner because of it. I mean, it looked like he was terrified of the football. Like, it just was going to hit him in the face or hit him in the shoulder. Like, just he hadn't done it before. And I know he has, but, man, that was those are tough. And, again, you already said it, but I'll double down. You can get away with that against Carolina when your offense is going to walk up and down the field and score against the team that's beaten, that's looking for an excuse to, go play golf. Not Steelers, man. You cannot do that against them. You can't do it this Thursday, and you can't do it the next time you play the Eagles, too. Like, those teams are too good to allow for more than the occasional mistake. Because there's going to be some. There are going to be moments where you try to run upfield before you catch the ball. Right? Pittsburgh had one. The fake punch you mentioned. That's a 60-yard gain. Maybe it's a touchdown. The guy drops it. Just flat out dropped it. Perfect call. Perfect everything. They had it. He drops it. They made mistakes, too. Washington made a lot more of them. And, when it kind of came to winning time, their guy was better than your guy on a couple different spots. That's what it is. Like, you could only overcome so much unless you're one of these, before free agency 49ers, 91 Redskins juggernauts, right? And you're not good enough. Nobody is right now in the NFL, I don't think, to overcome that many mistakes in crucial spots.
Not against a really good team.
Yeah, not against a good club.
And Pittsburgh at 6-2 coming in, now 7-2. And I want to keep saying this, off of a bye.
Mm-hmm.
Multiple weeks to prepare.
Yep.
Refreshed.
The plan showed, I thought, for them,
rested,
by the way.
Defensively, they had the best plan against Jaden Daniels. Daniels' running was a complete non-factor. He had three attempts for 5 yards. They spied him a bunch with Patrick Queen, who, by the way, is way faster than I thought. How did Ravens fans not like that guy for a couple of years? What am I missing? He was awesome yesterday for the Steelers. I thought he single-handedly did a nice job at erasing some of the running threat that Jaden Daniels has been. They did not get anything in the scramble game from Daniels. Daniels all season long has scrambled more than every other quarterback and for more yards, and he didn't have a single rushing yard as a scrambler yesterday. They kept him in the pocket, which is what they wanted to do. Now, in the same way that when he was in the pocket against the Ravens, he lit it up and almost beat Baltimore, they almost won the game anyway because he can make plays from the pocket, and if he had a little more help from his receivers yesterday, I think they probably would have won. I know you're not allowed to say anything other than Jaden Daniels should be the MVP and he's the greatest quarterback who's ever lived. I thought this was, since Tampa, probably the most average game he's played. Fair? I thought he was a little bit off with his accuracy on some throws. He missed that Luke McCaffrey throw from the end zone that would have been maybe a 98-yard touchdown.
It would have been a huge play,
but
one way or the other.
It would have been 60 or 70 yards. There was a play to Zacchaeus, actually, where he was coming across the middle of the field, would have been a huge chunk right toward the press box. He was out wide. It kind of went off of it, the fingertips or palm when he kind of missed him wide. I thought it was again, the standard for him has been that he has played like an MVP and at an elite level. I'm not saying he played badly. Mm-hmm. I just do not think he is. If you're looking at it like a plotting chart where his dots are always very high, I would say this was lower down this past week.
I think that's fair.
Than the level he has been playing.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
Also, the lack of running. He's a dual threat. Like, that's part of the equation. Mm-hmm. After every game, we look at it, and he ran for 30 or 40 or 60, or he had the back-breaking first down scramble. There was nothing from him on the ground.
Yeah, that was taken away. I mean, again, this is the thing that I worry about, right, as the season progresses, is does somebody go, ooh, that's a good formula? Now, not everybody has what Pittsburgh has on defense. I don't know how many opponents they've got coming up are going to be that good.
I mean, I've seen that all day. People are like, ooh, the blueprint's out. Okay, who's your Patrick Queen? I mean, you got TJ right. Watt. Highsmith got hurt, but you got Highsmith.
And Preston Smith out of the bullpen and Minka Fitzpatrick and the like. So, yeah, I mean, easier said than done. But it is something I am concerned about, by the way, just given Kingsbury's history and given, you know, that game reeked also. I imagine you might disagree. But in those moments, you don't need it against the Giants, Carolina, Cleveland when they've given up or anybody that's bad. That was one of those. Terry McLaurin made that 50-50 grab, made that huge play, toe tap down the side, and we go, damn, that's a grown man. George Pickens made it for them. Mike Williams makes one for them. They could have used another one. They could have used somebody in those moments.
Yeah.
And, you know, I understand that there wasn't a lot of opportunity to add somebody like that, and I know they don't want to, you know, think about it in the future, but that to me is a priority going into next year. I don't even want to talk about next year just yet, but
100%. I don't think anyone would disagree with that. Their number two receiver is a guy that was cut by the Texans before the season started. There's just a difference between like want versus need to an extent. And here's what I would say. It's like talking about an extra starting pitcher. 30 teams want an extra starting pitcher.
They could use that, yeah.
30 teams need it. Of course they need one more weapon in the passing game. But is it worth the assets? Are they the type of team week in and week out, by and large, that is going to bring in a receiver and feed that guy and involve that guy and allow him to put up numbers? Week to week, Noah Brown's basically a 2-4 catch, 20 to 50 yard guy. That's mm-hmm. not because he's Noah Brown as much as that's the role. You know, last week was probably as high, or yesterday rather, 7 targets. I mean, that's got to be one or two times all year he's mm-hmm. had more than 4 or 5 targets. That's just kind of what the number two role in this offense is. But I agree, if you had another guy of McLaurin's caliber, yeah, no kidding, it would be a lot better. I mean, it would help.
Well, yeah. Like, so you're telling me a good player will help them? Now, just thinking about those, you know, when you're trying to win games like that, I guess that's kind of my point here, is when it's winning time. You can get away with a lot when you're that much, and they deserve credit for this.
The Steelers don't have two of those, though. They have Pickens, who's good. They don't have anybody else. Mike Williams caught a touchdown.
He did.
He's done nothing all year with the Jets, and he mostly gets hurt all the time. I mean, he is a nice player down the field, but like, I guess my point is like...
Like, I wouldn't count on him down in and down out, but when it absolutely mattered, and he was one-on-one with somebody, he dominated that one time.
But I think if Noah Brown, as an example, had the same look against St. Jude's flat-footed.
He'll run by him,
too. He would run right by him and catch that ball. That was just a misplay by a DB, and they just kind of found a way to win. They had one guy who had more than 32 receiving yards. You know what the difference was? They ran the ball really well. They ran the ball 35 times with Warren and Harris yesterday. Wasn't even like they lit it up. I think Harris had like 20 for 50 or something.
Yeah,
like
Harris
that.
21 for 53. Warren 14 for 66, just over 4 yards a pop.
Nice change of pace. But yeah, I mean, I just think they had more success on the ground. They had more things going. Did you think Russell Wilson was that good? He ended up with 3 touchdowns. In the end of the game, winning time, I thought he was awesome.
Mm-hmm.
He made some big throws. But throughout, he was like 8 for 20 or 9 for 20 to start the game. I thought he was very average for much of the day.
There were the your down in, down out wasn't overly impressive. But to your point, there were enough of those huge moments where it was old school vintage Russell Wilson, scrambling for, you know, for time, dumping it down to somebody, or even a little first down burst. Some of those deep balls where they were clearly thinking they could, and they were right, taking shots down the football field against Washington's coverage. Marshon Lattimore can't get healthy quick enough, as far as I'm concerned.
No kidding.
Just thinking about some of the matchups and things.
McLaurin was tremendous.
I thought he was really good.
Went for $113. He's on pace for 1,200. He's never done that before. And I thought their defense played well enough to win. I'll be curious to see as we go today. At some point, I want to just take calls straight up on the defense's game because I am curious to see what people think. I think they were way better than the 28 points they allowed. Now, the one thing they've got to do, and this is an all-year-long issue, they have to make a stop in the red zone occasionally. Like some of these drives where, even on short fields, if you just turn 7 into 3, the whole game changes. The Steelers never had to trot out Boswell. If you can make them do that, then you're in a pretty good place. They couldn't. But they took the field on five consecutive drives, I think it was, in the second half, leading by one possession or trailing, where they just had to keep the offense afloat. And time and time and time and time again until that last drive, they were able to. You can't ask your defense to just keep bowing and holding up that way. And that's not the design of this team. That's not what this team's been all year.
No.
They did it in the Bears game. The defense won that team the football game, all respect to the Hail Mary, with 12 points going into the Hail Mary. And I thought they, if they would have won this game, it would have been about the defense. Because, yes, they scored 27. Seven of those were on a drive that started at the 15, if you remember. That was a three-play, 15-yard drive. Mm-hmm. They went three and out five times. They had 11 real drives. Nine of them were for 25 or fewer yards. They basically had two drives offensively in the whole game.
A couple backbreaking moments, though. Like a first down sack by Dante Fowler knocks him back 9 yards right away. George Pickens, not only did you get most of the yards back, you got a first down. There was a couple third and nines there in the second half, fourth quarter, where that's winning time. You've earned it. You did the work. And those were converted pretty easily. So, but in general, I think your point's 100% right. Defensively, I actually thought they were plenty fine for this group, because the standard for the offense is higher than it is for the defense.
Yeah, I mean, you look at after the first quarter touchdown, which was, by the way, on a drive that only netted 41 yards,
mm-hmm.
right? So after that, they allowed negative 5, 2, 25. These are yards per drive. 14, 12, negative 1. That was on the kneel down. So that doesn't count. But then Steelers come out 9 for 70, go get a touchdown. Then 4 plays, 5 yards. 3 plays, negative 4 yards. They have the touchdown drive. And then, you know, 6 plays, 5 plays, total of 7 yards at the end. They should have won based on how their defense played, in my opinion. And they just didn't do enough. I mean, look at the offense. I tweeted something to this effect yesterday at Grant H. Paulson for me, at Funny Danny for DR. This was their 10th football game this year, Danny.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at where their offense ranked in this game among 10 games that they've played, yards per play, 10th. Net yards, 10th by 57 yards. First downs, 9th out of 10 games. Third down percentage, 8th out of 10 games. And they were 0-for until a drive right before the half. Rushing net, 10th by 48 yards. Passing net, 9th. Number of points, 10th. Time of possession, 10th. By far their worst offensive game. Not close.
Yeah, and that's you know, A stands to reason. That's the best defense they've played. But B, again, that's a different outing with the drops.
Does that give you a little bit of anxiousness that you finally played a really good defense and they shut you down?
Yeah.
Because it does to me, except that I go, well, maybe if you had one of your two top three tackles, maybe if you had B-Rob, it looks a little different. But let's open up the phones for game balls to the best and gassers to the worst. Who gets your game ball from yesterday's outing, and who are you going to make run a lap for struggling? 800-636-1067 is the number on Grant and Danny on the Fan.
Why get all your holiday decorations delivered through Instacart? Because maybe you only bought two wreaths, but you have 12 windows. Or maybe your toddler got very eager with the advent calendar. Or maybe the inflatable snowman didn't make it through the snowstorm. Or maybe the twinkle lights aren't twinkling. Whatever the reason, this season, Instacart's here for hosts and their whole holiday haul. Get decorations from the Home Depot, CVS, and more through Instacart and enjoy free delivery on your first three orders. Service fees and terms apply.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
First and goal from the one. On a give, Eckler takes it in. Touchdown.
That was Ian Eagle on the call on CBS yesterday of a Commanders one-point loss at the hands of the Steelers. Welcome back. Grant and Danny on the Fan taking you up to 6:30. Jay Gruden will join us at 5. We're going to be giving out game balls here to the best and gassers to the worst. You can call us at 800-636-1067 if you want to participate in game balls and gassers. I should point out, because I just heard Ian Eagle there on the call. Before the game, I went over to the booth, said what's up to Birdman, said what's up to our guy Charles Davis, dapped them up and hung out a little bit. Great guys, number one. Number two, so the broadcast booth is in the like nicest version of the owner's suites.
Uh-huh.
And then they just have a booth in there. But it will never get to a point where it feels normal or it's not kind of cool. When I was going over there to see them, just walked right past Magic Johnson.
That's just Magic Johnson, dude.
Saw him 5 feet away. Didn't say anything. Didn't stop.
Sure.
Didn't shake his hand up. You know, I wasn't even probably even supposed to be in there. I was just beelining it to the broadcast booth because those guys wanted to, you know, chat for a minute. But that's Magic Johnson. It is not something I've gotten used to, and I'm not sure that it is something I will get used to.
Yeah, I don't know when it's going to become, you know, old hat that Magic Johnson is tweeting about my football team because he's one of the owners of the football team. Not just some, like, cursory stake either. Like, he's one of the huge partners in that deal. That's Magic Johnson, dude. I mean, I remember his entire career. That's just wild to think about. That's cool.
All right, game balls and gassers. Here we go. Austin Eckler going to be on the show tomorrow at 5. I thought he ran really hard. Man, did he get hit. Walloped a few times. Absolutely thumped. Ended up averaging just about 3.4 a pop. Those were hard-earned yards against a Steelers defense that is tough to run on. Two touchdowns for him in the game, throwing it back to his days when he led the NFL in touchdowns in two straight seasons. But I thought Eckler, he gave you everything he had all day long.
Zach Ertz, catch the ball, 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 catch the ball. Hold the ball once you've caught it. Catch the ball and hold the ball. You used to do that against us just fine. When it was you in another uniform, you caught every damn ball, including 17 or something like that in one game for the Eagles for so many yards. Just catch the ball. Catch the ball. The emphasis here, catch the ball and hold it once you've caught it. It's too much to ask for you these days to be athletic at all. Hold on, I'm not even done. To catch the ball and fall backwards for a first down, too much to ask for you not to do a slow motion, sand in the hourglass, catch the ball, slowly meander, turn around while two defenders are closing on you so quickly. I know you don't have that card in the bag or club in the bag anymore, but please, for the love of God, catch the ball.
Dante Fowler had two sacks in this game. Dante Fowler has four sacks in the last two games. Dante Fowler has a sack in six of Washington's last seven games at this point. He is on pace for 14 sacks. If that sounds like a lot, it should.
Mm-hmm.
No player in this organization's recent history has gotten to 14 sacks. In fact, the last time anybody did, it was 1985. And in that year, Dexter Manley and Charles Mann both did it. In fact, if you look at the highest sack seasons in team history, Dexter Manley had 18 and a half. He also had 15 in 1985. Charles Mann, that same year, had 14 and a half. Ryan Kerrigan's 13 and a half in 2014 in the post-Manly Mann 80s era. The only Washington player with more than 13 sacks in a season. And right now, Dante Fowler, signed for next to nothing.
For nothing.
Is on pace for 14 sacks. He's also got a great celly. I don't really know what it means, but I love when he like bends down and wipes the front of his shoes off. Someone could explain that to me maybe at Grant H. Paulson. I think it's a 10 out of 10. Might have to ask him about it, but he is balling out right now.
Benjamin St. Juice, tough one. Now, I know the PFF grades have come out, and he actually down in, down out, probably played better than he's going to get credit for. I know this, when Pittsburgh saw him one-on-one, they went after him. Whether that was George Pickens, whether it was Mike Williams late, whatever, they were comfortable. Got flagged as well in this one. Marshawn Lattimore can't get healthy soon enough.
Terry McLaurin was terrific again. Terry McLaurin had 113 yards on five catches. That doesn't really tell the story on his six targets. He had the huge 54-yard catch and run to set the tone in the third quarter. They came out after halftime without Tyler Biadasz at center. So now you've got a third-string right tackle. You have a backup center, and you're dealing with the Steelers' front. And I thought, oh, my God, this is going to get ugly. Not on that drive. Because it was five plays and into the end zone, thanks to Terry McLaurin taking over with a couple of huge grabs, including the 54-yarder. He had a super physical catch down near the goal line as well when he ran through a couple tackles. It was clearly like the Steelers just thought he was going to go down, and he said, not unless you make me go down. I really want to advance the football. This is the whole point of the game. That guy just wanted it more than Pittsburgh on a couple of snaps, and it was very obvious. He also made that ridiculous toe-tap catch on the sideline on what was a gorgeous ball. perfectly thrown, big-time throw from Jaden Daniels, by far his best ball of the game yesterday. Terry McLaurin had one of his better games, one of his more efficient games of the season, I thought.
Referees, I'll never understand. I will never understand the way that the ball is spotted. We're just sort of best guessing here. On the Zach Ertz play where he, you know, moseyed back to the football, fell down or whatever, whether they got the first down or not, I have no idea. I do know that a ref 7 yards back from where the first down marker actually is not in the best spot to figure out where the forward progress started and stopped. I think ultimately he probably was maybe a hair short, which is fine. They marked him a yard short, which is not fine. Wrong.
So you do think he was short?
I think it could have been either way. I think it's really, really hard to tell.
I think he got it. My argument on this is, everyone says, well, look at this, look at that. First of all, he needed to get to the 41. He was at the 41. That's number one. Number two, how much football do we watch? Collectively, I'd say a good bit, right? You guys watch some football. You give the receiver the benefit of the doubt on that 1,000 times out of 1,000. Have you ever seen them spot a guy short on that exact play? It doesn't happen. He caught the ball, even if his momentum goes, you know, a couple of feet shorter of the stick, and he wasn't touched, so you know you don't get the benefit of how far down the field you were. On a game-extending and nine situation there, you run the route, you get to the nine-yard marker, you make the catch. That is a first down, and the game continues 99.99999% of the time in this league.
So here's what I can't have. Whether it was there or not, I don't know. Whatever, right? What was the thing that I do know is you can't be a yard shy of where he actually was, which is where they spotted it. Never corrected it, by the way. No, and no one talked about it. They moved on because it was Pittsburgh's time to draw Johnny Newton offsides later. But that was the end, and it was baffling to me. Absolutely baffling that a guy was not in position at all to make that call. That's the part I care about. The process stunk.
Jeremy Chinn had two takeaways. He had the big interception. That was a moon ball kind of, you know, arm punt, essentially, from Russell Wilson. But somebody's got to make the play. Jeremy Chinn did for a takeaway. Love that. And then, more importantly, on the goal line, the reason they had a chance to win the game, the Quan Martin strips, so give him a game ball, please, because that play. It's just a great play. And then Chinn coming up with the football. How good has Jeremy Chinn been?
Very good.
Chinn is deserving of a second contract mm-hmm. right now. Dante Fowler is deserving of a second contract right now among the veterans that they brought in on the defensive side of the ball. Game ball to Jeremy Chinn again.
Tackling and awareness. Awareness I'll get to in a second. I didn't think they tackled very well yesterday. Kind of an underrated subplot. A number of times, the first guy was there meeting Najee Harris in the hole or just outside the edge or Jaylen Warren, same kind of deal. And it would end up, instead of being a second and nine, it was a second and four. A number of times that happened to me, and it was frustrating. Kind of, again, underrated part of the of that game, not going their way. In general, I thought the defense played okay. Tackling wasn't great. And then the awareness. On the telecast, I could see Mike Tomlin walking over to the referee, telling him something before that fourth down, not go for it, go for it thing. 99 times out of 100, you want to talk about 99 times out of 100, that's the coach saying, I'm going to call a timeout with 1 second left on the play clock if we don't get this, or whatever, right? Referee nods to him. That's not a normal course of events for a play. That was an obvious tell. I'm pudgy and zero, and I can see it at home. I need you to be aware. That's all. That's a instant lose. I would have loved to have seen it play out if they actually made the play or not, if they quarterback sneaked or they handed it off. Maybe you make it, maybe you don't. You had no chance the way that it went down.
Next, your game balls and your gassers. We want to hear from you on Grant and Danny at 800-636-1067. Steelers, 28. Commanders, 27. Washington falls to 4-1 at home, losing in front of the locals at Northwest Stadium for the first time. This is The Fan.
Daniels throwing on first down to Terry McLaurin. Breaks away! Foot race McLaurin will get caught by Joey Porter. But a huge gain on the first play from scrimmage.
With Danny, I'm Grant. This is The Fan. We're giving out game balls to the best and assigning gassers to the worst. The Steelers are 7-2, and Washington fell to 7-3. They've got a very quick turnaround now. A Thursday meeting in Philly with the first place Eagles. Washington is chasing in the NFC East for the first time since week two now, when they had the tiebreaker after beating the Giants and getting to 1-0 in the division, and everybody in the East was 1-1, I believe, at that time. But since then, they have been the front runners, and they have looked like they were going to set the pace The Eagles just kept on stringing wins together, and now they host Washington with a chance to make it a 1.5 game cushion in the division. Commanders would be chasing and thinking wild card, at least for the moment, if they can't handle their business on Thursday.
Big swing game right here, because Philadelphia's schedule is soft, as is Washington's, outside of playing Philly a couple times, and Philly is playing better and better as the season goes.
Yeah, I got a text from a buddy who's in the local D.C. media last night, and he said, man, if they lose to the Eagles, he said the conversation about this team is going to change really fast. Because if you look at the NFC playoff picture with teams like San Francisco surging that aren't even in the playoffs right now, now all of a sudden they're 7-4. They're going to be a half game better than a couple of teams that might be, you know, historically expected to make the playoffs this year over them. And while that's true, I think the narrative could change a little if they lose to the Eagles for like a week and a half going into that next game. Their schedule the rest of the way is Charmin soft. I have a really hard time not thinking they're going to bounce right back. The Cowboys are so bad. Did you see them yesterday?
Yes, I did.
They're embarrassing. That is a team you play twice, by the way. That's two wins, as far as I'm concerned. They play the Titans in a couple of weeks. The Titans come here. So it's the Eagles game Thursday. Then you get that mini bye, half of extra week to prepare for Dallas. You win that by a million at home. And then the Titans come to town. You got to win that game. So now you're going into the bye potentially, assuming you don't have a really, really, really bad loss. And this is if you lose to the Eagles, which is a toss-up game, you can still win. You're still, worst-case scenario, I would say at that point, like 9-4, with games against the Cowboys again and the Saints still looming. If you win one of Eagles or Falcons, which is the only two remaining games out of the bye against playoff-caliber teams, you still have a shot at 12. Pretty easy shot at 11. So I'm not concerned about the postseason or the wild card, even if they lose to the Eagles. But it will be a little cold water, as they were about to be 8-2.
Yeah.
Now you're 7-4. You're a Hail Mary away from 6-5. The story will change some. But we'll worry about all that as we get closer to the Eagles game. Let's go to the phones. Let's go to Jaden, who's in Columbus, Ohio, and Grant and Danny. What's up, Jaden?
Yeah, how's it going, guys?
Good, buddy.
I think my game ball is still going to go to Jaden Daniels and Dan Quinn, because I think with them, they're kind of giving, not an illusion, because I think we are good, but our roster isn't good around them. It just isn't. No one came to the season thinking we had any shot at 10 or 11 wins, but they've both been so good where we have the illusion that, oh, we should have beat Pittsburgh. We have a chance at Philly. But if you look at our roster, Philly has, I mean, think about it. How many first-round picks do we have? We don't have really any on the roster that are that good. The Steelers have T.J. Watt, bona fide first-round pick. Minkah Fitzpatrick, bona fide first-round pick. They got Najee Harris, bona fide first-round pick. George Pickens, a high second-round pick. And those guys jump off the screen. I mean, I love Terry, but Terry's still – I mean, Terry's good. I think he's a guy you look at that's kind of maxed out what he does physically. But George Pickens made a couple plays where I'm watching at a bar with some buddies in Columbus, and they're just like, oh, yeah, that's what a second-round pick looks like. Like, that's what a first-round star receiver looks like. I mean, and I think – honestly, I'm still going to – if those would be my game balls, Gassers, I guess that's still – is this going to sound cheesy, but I'm still going to go Ron Rivera. It's like, when you miss on high-round picks, that holds back your roster.
Yeah, I mean, none of the last four are on the roster, pretty much, right?
He's thinking about this from the 20,000-foot view, and I got no problem with that, less about the game itself. The only thing I would say, the only issue I take with that logic, which I think is true, when you take inventory after a loss and you pick through it and you go – I don't know how good this roster is at this position, that position. I could do the same thing with the Kansas City Chiefs, who are 9-0. They got Andy Reid and they got Patrick Mahomes that make a lot of things okay. Their running back right now is Kareem Hunt, who was on the street a couple of weeks ago. Their wide receiver room, they just traded for DeAndre Hopkins, who is long in the tooth and has not really been the guy that everyone loved in 3 years, basically. Mm-hmm. But before that, their leading receiver was... I don't know, is Noah Gray count as a tight end or a wide receiver? Like, Travis Kelce is 60 years old and averages 7.5 yards a catch now. They don't have anybody. Their team is made up of guys they were signing. Juju Smith-Schuster got cut by the Patriots, went to Kansas City, and became their leading receiver for a couple weeks until he got hurt. They're 9-0. The idea of, like, talent is whatever, you know, I don't want to say it's not important. It's so important. Scheme is really, really important. Washington, going into the week, had the best offense in the league. They did that with this group. They did that because with McCaffrey and with Brown and with Diami and with these guys. Like, they get guys open, they make plays, and it's a Jaden Daniels, it's a Cliff Kingsbury, no doubt about it. It's about scheme, it's about the quarterback. But my point is just the talent thing is accurate and also hasn't been a problem as they were 7-2, really.
No, I think that's fair. And for the only pushback I would have, and I think I rubber stamp everything you said, is there's going to be a moment where it's not about scheme anymore. And they fell short in a couple of those yesterday. Will they do that this week? I have no idea. Will they do that in the postseason? I have no idea.
Yeah.
But I think those are elements.
And maybe that's where it's like, are they Super Bowl caliber good? No, probably not, mm-hmm. because they don't have that talent. But I would say the teams that are expected to win playoff games right now, a lot of them don't have that talent. Like, they might be short.
There are a number of examples, right? This is the nature of the league now.
Threw five picks last night.
Yeah.
And, well, he's good. He's very good in that offense with Ben Johnson. Like, you're scared about playing him in the playoffs? No, that's the most likely team to come out of the NFC and the most likely. He was an MVP candidate going into that game. Threw five picks. Let's go to Kevin in Arlington on Grant and Danny. What's up, Kevin?
Hey, fellas. Based on that last call, I'm giving a game ball to Ron Rivera, because if those four number ones didn't bust, we wouldn't have Daniels, okay? And I'm going to give him his Super Bowl ring because we got Daniels because of his incompetence. But speaking of game balls and speaking of Daniels, I'm going to drill in a little deeper on why I think Daniels is his game ball. He was hurt. He has been hurt. They were treating his ribs throughout the game. He was getting hurried and banged up with those three sacks. Okay, that's a ferocious front that Pittsburgh has. I tip my cap to them. They took scrambling away, and with there's no Brian Robinson, you can take scrambling away. They did it in Baltimore. So he was 17 of 34, but I counted six drops. Okay, that makes him 23 of 34, his basic 65% passing. Okay, I'm just saying, and he didn't have an NFL right tackle yesterday. Trent Scott is a USFL player. Somehow he actually played very well for him. But let's get real. We didn't have so many things. And yet that great Steeler team barely beat us with some help at the end by a ref who broke up our fourth down perfect record. So, hey,
that's true.
That was, Kev, their first time not converting a fourth down.
And it
wasn't
an incomplete pass or something batted down. They needed 9.1 and got 9.
I want more of these game balls for the best, gassers for the worst. What'd you like? What didn't you like? Also, out of this game, 1 point loss to Pittsburgh, no Brian Robinson, missing two of your top three tackles against TJ Watt and company. Was yesterday encouraging in the bigger picture of where this program's at, or discouraging to you? Do you come out of that game more encouraged or discouraged? We're G&D on the Fan.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.